sinful life is the cause of one's dragging on in material existence. The human form of life is the only loophole by which one may get out of this entanglement. The Vedas, therefore, give us a chance for escape by pointing out the paths of religion, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, the means to get out of the miserable condition entirely. The path of religion, or the different kinds of sacrifice recommended above, automatically solves our economic problems. By performance of yajna, we can have enough food, enough milk, etc. Even if there is so-called increase of population, when the body is fully supplied, naturally the next stage is to satisfy the senses. The Vedas prescribe, therefore, sacred marriage for regulated sense gratification. Thereby, one is gradually elevated to the platform of release from material bondage, and the highest perfection of liberated life is to associate with the Supreme Lord. Perfection is achieved by performance of yajna, as described above. Now, if a person is not inclined to perform yajna according to the Vedas, how can he expect a happy life, even in this body? And what to speak of another body on another planet? There are different grades of material comforts in different heavenly planets. And in all cases, there is immense happiness for persons engaged in different kinds of yajna. But the highest kind of happiness that a man can achieve is to be promoted to the spiritual planets by practice of Krishna consciousness. A life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all the problems of material existence. Nayam lokostya yajnasya kutanya kurusattama. O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? A life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all the problems of material existence. Obviously, many of us were shattered, devastated, when Srila Prabhupada left this world in 1977. We weren't prepared. I know many of us somehow or other thought that he would go on living forever, maybe. We just didn't think of it. It didn't enter our brains. And then when it happened so suddenly, I remember I was in Vrindavan, and I was the president of Hyderabad Temple. And we had gone to Srila Prabhupada, and he had said that Krishna has said that it is up to me whether I stay or go, so what do you want? You go and have a meeting, and then you tell me. So we went outside, and some people said, well, you know, he's suffering, let him go. But the overwhelming majority said, no, we need him. We can't live without him. So we went back in. Kirtanananda was the spokesperson. He got down on his knees to speak to Prabhupada, and then he just began bawling. He couldn't speak. And then Brahmananda blurted out, Prabhupada, we need you. Please stay. And then Prabhupada paused for a moment, kind of yawned. Okay. It was such comic relief that I don't know, it was like most strange and yet beautiful feeling. Prabhupada said he would stay. And I took him on his word. And so I left to go back to my work. And then he left a week or so later. So it was hard after that. We didn't have his personal association. We had a lot of it in India. Those who served in India, it was hard. Prabhupada said 6 months in India was like 2 years in the West. There were many struggles. But the beautiful thing that was that Prabhupada was always there to make it better. Like a loving father and an innocent child who can't do without his daddy. So I began to think, what is it? Why am I so attracted to this man? Why has he stolen my heart? And then I began to reason, what did he give me? Well, he gave me books. He gave me friends, a reason for living. And then I understood that he gave me a way of life. He gave me a way of life by which I could get free from all of my suffering completely, forever. And of course, my appreciation for his association grew and grew, and I began to realize that although it was painful living without his personal association, that I had to carry on. If I actually had any love for him, then I had to live on in his memory and share with others what I knew he would do if he were still here. Share that message, share that way of life. And it's very clear here, Prabhupada, in his purport, the life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all problems. It seems so simplistic, but it's simple because the absolute truth is simple. Krishna is God, we are his servants. And our constitutional position is moment-to-moment awareness and complete absorption in his service, samarpanam. And until we achieve that, we can never even expect to be happy in this material world. I remember when one of my god brothers had fallen down in Bombay. Good old Rishi Kumar, one of the original devotees from 26 Second Avenue. And he had taken sannyas at a very young age, 19. Prabhupada took a chance and he did service, nice service, but he couldn't last. And he didn't lose, but he has to finish in another life. But I was surprised at that time when I went to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I'm surprised that your big devotee fell down. And Prabhupada said, you shouldn't be surprised when someone falls down. Everyone in the material world has fallen. You should be surprised when someone can follow. Okay? So, somehow, the legacy is now with us that we have to share with people this wonderful way of life. We have to educate people. I remember the first Indian I met. We were doing Harinam. There was a small temple in Vancouver. This was in 1969. And we were doing Sankirtan out front of the Hudson's Bay, Granville and Georgia. And this man came up the street. I had a lot of interesting pastimes in that year. Anyway, he came up this upper Granville, which is a hill, and he turned the corner, and there was the Sankirtan party. There were three of us, I think. Four. Chidananda, Rudra, Rabindra, myself, and maybe Ananda was there. And, you know, I said, oh no! This is exactly what I left India for, to get away from people like you. But actually, I was thinking of another story. The first devotee I met. And that was in 1968, actually. Hansa Duda had come through with a party of devotees, and they were chanting out front of the library. And I was in the pharmaceutical industry at that time, and I was testing out some of my chemicals. I was quite absorbed. So I met the devotees, and, you know, I was troubled like everyone else. And, you know, I started to talk to this devotee, and he told me that you're not this body. It was shocking to me. I never thought of that. That's an interesting angle you have there. But it was just something that never occurred to me, that I was anything else but this bag of you-know-what. And there are so many things that are very simple for an enlightened person, but are just beyond the universe of materialistic man who's engrossed. I remember on another occasion, because I'm a Vancouver boy, I would meet from time to time so many of my old friends. And I remember meeting one friend on the street while distributing books. And at that time we didn't have books, we had magazines. And I was all enthusiastic. I was going to give him the whole philosophy of Bhagavad Gita in 5 minutes, you know. I was preaching to him, and, you know, he was absorbed. He was listening. He was hearing. And he was interested. And then I distinctly remember this beautiful blonde and tight skirt, that was the fashion in those days, wiggling by. And he, you know, was listening to me, but then all of a sudden his eyes began to follow the girl. I was still talking to him, but he got distracted. Because yehi sansparsa jav bolga dukkha yonaya evate. We can't focus our attention. It's our sansparsa, the touch, the contact of the senses with the sense objects. It's our meditation. Yayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama. From our absorption, which we've been trained in from our childhood and from many births previous, we've been wandering throughout the Brahmanda and doing the same thing, chewing the chewed, puna punas charvita, charvananam. You really get a sense of all these examples when you live in India, and I recommend it for everybody. For a year, or 2 years, or a few years, or whatever. And I remember my first glass of sugar cane juice. And in those days, they didn't have the motorized ones. They had the ones where you just crank the wheel. And usually there's a father and son, because they take the cane and it's one piece and they put it through the grinding wheel and the father turns it around. And you think, I'm going to get my glass of juice, because you see the juice coming out into the little pot and there's enough there for a glass. But no, he pulls it through the other side and pulls it in half and pushes it through again. So the wheels chew it again. And he's going like this, and Then you think, now I'm going to get my juice. But no, he pulls it and cracks it on his knee and pulls it through. This time he can't quite get it, so his son jumps on his back and, you know, they both push it together. And he pushes it through, and finally it comes out like almost sawdust. And you get your glass of juice, but then he takes that and he throws it into the street, and then the cows come up and they start chewing on it. That's chewing the chewed, but that's what we've been doing. So we've been doing lifetime after lifetime, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Ahar nidra vai maitunam cha dharmena hina pashu bisamana. The only difference between us and animals is that we have a capacity to understand, to dedicate our life and our life's energy in the pursuit of self-realization, Krishna consciousness. And if we don't do that with all our heart and soul, then pashu bisamana. Dharmena hina, without religious life, spiritual life, we're just sophisticated cats and dogs. And that goes for anyone, anywhere. Devotees are not people who wear tilak and dhoti and kanti mala. Devotees are people who rishikena rishikesha sevanam. They use their senses actively in the service of Krishna. Whether it be working physically for Krishna, or moving your hands, chanting japa, or even moving the cogwheels in your brain and, you know, chanting in your, if that's all you can do, but you're actively doing it. How often? Satatam kirtayantoma, 24 hours a day, nitya yukta upasate. It's not something that we do to get to achieve some benefit. We're not worshiping Krishna whereby we get some benefit and then we stop the austerity. The yajna is for Vishnu, yajna vai Vishnu, yajna tat karma no anyatra loka yam karma bandhana. Unless we direct our activities to God, and we can't be inactive, it's not possible. Even just here in this room, it's very hard to sit still for a few moments. Of course, children, but we're just grown-up children. And if we haven't learned to focus on Krishna, then we're going to be engaged in focusing on Maya. Nahi kashit shanavi jatu tishtati karmakrit. You can't remain inactive even for a moment. You have to do. So therefore, the only defense against Maya is an offense. Not an offense, but a proactive thing that you do. Love is a verb. It's not a noun. The noun is in Hollywood, but the verb is in the hearts of the devotees. They work for Krishna. They serve Krishna actively. And it's the greatest lesson that we can learn in our lives. Believe me. I have a brother. He's a Fulbright scholar. That's the North American equivalent of a Rhodes Scholarship. Very prestigious scholarship out of maybe 20,000, 30,000 applicants, maybe 100 qualify in different fields. But his life is a mess. So intelligent, but his life is a mess. He's 40 years old. He still hasn't completed. He's had 4 kids. He's divorced. But me, I dropped out in first year UBC because I wasn't happy. But he thinks that I know much more than him just because I know Krishna a little bit. I don't even know Krishna much. But whatever little I have been taught by Prabhupada, whatever little I give to others, they think that's wonderful, because it is wonderful. And it is our duty. This is what Prabhupada gave to us. And if we can't preach, one of us got life, he can preach. And it's not hard to preach. I can promise you. I tell you, my mother's there, you can go and ask her. When I was very young, I was very shy. Most people can't believe that because I'm so extroverted, it appears. But I was very shy until I found a reason for being extroverted. So I found a reason for talking to people, something worthwhile. So each and every one of us, man, woman, and child, we're here on this planet for this purpose. We've been chosen out of millions and millions of people. We've been chosen to associate with a Shakti Avesh avatar. He is Prabhupada. In front of him, all gurus and sadhus and acharyas bow their heads at his feet. If they don't, well, they should, because he's just done what nobody else can ever even think of doing. Others can only imitate his success or try to chip away at his success and gain some prestige. We're so lucky, I just can't believe how fortunate we are. And I have seen, because although my base has been India for the last 30 years, but I also do a lot of traveling. I must have been around. People ask me, where have you been? And I say, ask me where I haven't been. That would be easier for me. And I've seen cultures. I notice people. I notice devotees. And I read papers, and I watch CNN. I don't know if that's any way of understanding the world, but the fact is that although we have problems, we have a lot less problems than non-devotees, although it may not be so easy to understand from the surface. Just like I can come to a temple, stay there for a few days, and say, wow, everything's going on nicely here. This is really a great temple. And then a friend will tell me, well, stay here a week. There's some problems here. But outside, there are so many problems. Ours are just the baggage we brought with us from that world. And we can get better, and we want to get better, and we will get better if we keep working at it. If we work together in a spirit of friendship, in a spirit of love for Srila Prabhupada, in a spirit of yajna or sacrifice. That's what it takes, sacrifice. Devoting your time to build something wonderful that Srila Prabhupada would be happy about. Everyone should build a Prabhupada's palace, whether it be book distribution or movie making or community building. Everybody should do something wonderful and dedicate his life to it, and always keep your mind focused in a positive way. Stay 10,000 miles away from politics and just be happy and go on. Apratyata, hoituki apratyata. Pure devotional service is not affected. Pure devotees, they go on. No matter what the problems are, they're just tests. They're just tests. Do you want me, spirit soul? Or do you want to get caught up in mundane banality? You want to get caught up in failure? You want to be a loser? Do you want me? I'm here. You have to prove that you want me. You have to keep on trying. It's important that we adopt this attitude so that we can be happy even now. Karmana manasa gira. Our body, mind, and words absorb 24 hours a day in how to spread Krishna consciousness. How to be part of the family, how to be part of the team, how to be part of the community that is actively reaching out to the world, because our first duty, before we even think of our own self-interest, our own interests, our very first duty is to please our spiritual master. We have no right. We have received such a tremendous gift from him. He saved us. Who knows where we were going? In the darkest regions of hell. Faithless, cynical, intoxicated, malicious. He knows where we were going. The prophet came and he suffered for us. He picked us up and we owe him so much. And our first duty is to serve his desire. And we shouldn't have to be told because we know what he wanted. He wanted us to Jare Deko Tare Kaho Krishna Upadesh. He wanted us to distribute his books. He wanted us to follow up and talk to the people who are suffering in the world. He was the kindest man, full of compassion for everyone. He gave his life's blood to the last moment to save us and to save the world. And we have to participate in his mission because we are followers of Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami. We're Prabhupada Anugas. We have to preach. And we won't be happy unless we do that. So, I apologize if I got a little out of hand. I'm sorry, I'm such a rascal. Hare Krishna, thank you. And I'll go home. I'm going to write a book someday. Keep telling myself and a few disciples I have. It's going to be called... Well, I won't call it The Power of Prayer because there's too many books out with that name. Maybe I'll call it Prayer Shakti or something. Because the last 6 years of my life have been a wild ride. I'll give you some highlights. Probably some of you have heard the name Tamal Krishna Goswami. And at least for me, he's always been a wonderful older brother. Oh, I fought with him many times because I was proud as a peacock when I was a brahmachari. And he was a heavy dude. As Hansiduta used to say, nothing new. And this guru off the wall song. But Goswami Maharaj, I love him. Anyway, I was in the hospital in Bombay. I'd just come out of a coma. And I really felt so bad because, well, a lot of the doctors in the Bhaktivedanta hospital, I preached to them when they were going to college, and they all knew me. And that was nice, you know. So they would come into my hospital room, and before treating me, they'd offer their vacancies. I don't want a disciple, I want a doctor. But I was missing my god brothers, god sisters. I felt very emotional. And Goswami Maharaj had just come from Cambridge where he was doing his PhD and he had a week or 10 days or something. And he was in Govardhan where he loved to be. But he heard that I was in the hospital and then he, he immediately phoned up and told the doctors he was coming. And everybody got excited at Radha Gopinath Temple and Radharas Bihari Temple. And Radha Giridhari, we have three temples in Bombay. And they were all thinking, oh, he'll come, he'll give classes, he'll give lectures, and give darshan, see the deities. And he flew to Bombay. So they all, got him. He said, I haven't come here to give any classes. I haven't come to see any deities. I only come here to see one deity. That's my god brother. And he spent 3 days, a whole day we're together chanting and reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That was very nice. Of course, he grilled the doctors in his usual style, what is my prognosis? Even I didn't know, Gave me less than 6 months to live. I didn't know, so I didn't cooperate, but... Then I went to Santa Barbara, and, I was in a hospital there. I was in a coma for a number of days. And this one nurse came to give me some drug, injection, and I said, well, what is it? I don't know if I want to take it. And she said, you have to take it. I said, you have to tell me what it is. She said, no, I don't. You just take it. I said, well, I'll call the police. So she went outside. And then this other nurse comes in and, you know, kind of half pleasant. I don't know if the right word is sardonic or... Anyway, she said, did you see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson? And I remember when I was in college, I had seen a movie called The King of Hearts, which is a foreign film. But I think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was kind of takeoff from that. It was a really good film. So anyway, I said, yes, yes, it was good. And she said, well, I'm Nurse Ratched. I said, you know, somebody in the hospital would try to freak out a patient, you know, like that. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but Nurse Ratched was this heavy, heavy nurse who, you know, Jack Nicholson was in this mental hospital because he wanted to get out of the prison. But he wasn't really crazy. But they had this thing of giving such heavy shock treatment to mental patients that they just became like vegetables. And so he really was having fun with the so-called crazy people in the hospital and treated them like persons, and they loved him, and he was having a great time. They even snuck out of the hospital one night, escaped, and went for a boat ride. And of course, they were finally caught and taken back, but... So she finally had him put into the shock treatment, and in the end he comes out as a vegetable. So she tried to freak me out. And yeah, it's been really good because in the adversity that I've faced, I've learned more lessons about forgiveness and humility and the need for fraternity. The need to develop our relationships with Vaishnavas in a very real, meaningful way, because we just don't know how long we're going to be here. Who would have thought Goswami Maharaj would leave? He just wasn't the kind of person who would make the mistakes that were made on that day when the car was driving. He was, you know, on top of every little detail. How much sleep the driver had had, whether he'd just come from Calcutta. Goswami Raj was in the front seat. He didn't ride in the front seat. He always rode in the back seat because it's very dangerous. There's so many things that happened. It was almost strange. It was strange. But we don't know when our last moment will be there. And, you know, why do we have to wait until someone goes before we eulogize them? It should be very natural and easy for us to eulogize Vaishnavas who are... But that's the first offense in chanting, to blaspheme the devotees who are engaged in spreading the glories of the Lord. So the opposite, another offense, is to not glorify them. Because omission is one kind of commission. Lots of nice lessons. And another lesson is that I've got to get to bed on time if I'm going to come to Mangalarti. Mangalarti is very important, by the way. I've got a page of quotes from Folio. Actually, about two pages of quotes, little snippets, where Prabhupada says that there is no question of spiritual advancement. One has to fall down if one is not rising early, taking morning bath, attending Mangalarti, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles. We vow to do all these things. It doesn't matter what's happening. We made these vows to Krishna, to Prabhupada, to the holy fire. We didn't make these vows to the GBC or the guru who fell down or whatever. We made these vows from our heart. We can't give them up. A man is as good as his word. Chandanacharya, you remember Chandanacharya? He was having a discussion with Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, what about these devotees who are no longer following? Prabhupada got very